What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 197 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't really answer your question first time. Not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talking about beards.
Beards.
What does that mean, Paul?
The big beans and the big brown ripple.
Who knows, Andy? I don't know.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. You can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we're going to dive into a miniature-sized mailbag to answer a small selection of listener-submitted questions.
That's right, Paul. I felt like after last week's mega episode, nearly 2 hours long, talking all about the horrific situation going on in the Amazon, we needed something light. We needed something light and fun on our plate. And since as we come up to episode 200, which would normally be demarcated as a mailbag, we're going to do something like a little bit different, still mailbaggy, but different focus. So for that reason, we're going to push a few of those fun mailbag questions into this episode. So should be a nice, fun, light jaunt in the world of the Beard Vegans today.
You know, Andy, I like that demarcated is now in your vocabulary after last week's episode. Not that maybe you have never said it before, but I know I certainly have probably never used it in a sentence before. So there we go. Look at us increasing our vocabulary.
There we go. All right. We're learning something from doing this podcast, Paul. Finally, we're learning something.
I also like, however, that it's approaching episode 200, which means we've done this intro script almost 200 times, and yet we still find adorable ways to goof it up every once in a while. As you, if you listen past the outro music, you will hear a good old spoof.
Yes, yes, indeed. All right, Paul. So on the subject of mailbags, though, and on the subject of episode 200, we're putting out the call like we normally do for mailbag submissions, where we like to answer listener questions, comments, and concerns. Because it's episode 200, we want to make this more of a podcast-specific type of mailbag, which I think we did something like that around episode 100. Personally, Paul, I love it when podcasts talk about like behind the scenes stuff and history and like all of those angles. So hopefully others find enjoyment in that as well. But I think it'd be fun to sort of reflect on the history of the podcast and where it's been, maybe where it's going. So if you have any questions about the podcast, anything very small from like audio setup or whatever, or to process or, podcast pet peeves or like whatever it might be. Anything in that realm, maybe if it's not vegan specific, feel free to send those in to us to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And Paul, you know what else happens every mailbag episode?
We got to announce that the review winners, Andy.
That's right. So Paul, for anyone that's like, what the heck is Paul talking about? Every mailbag episode, we pick three random people who have left us reviews on iTunes or Stitcher, and we use a randomized number generator to pick three people, and we send you some Beard Vegan swag, some buttons, some stickers, usually a nice little handwritten note, something like that. So if you want to help out the podcast, leaving a review is a great way to do that. Doesn't cost anyone any money and only takes a minute or so of your time. So if you enter once, you're entered in perpetuity. And you always have a chance to win. So even if you left a review after episode 2 came out, you still have a chance to win. Go ahead and do that. We greatly appreciate it.
You know, Andy, I've got a funny story for you that I forgot to tell you when we were talking earlier. But, you know, we're soliciting emails, we're soliciting podcast themed questions, and as we do, you know, every episode we say, if you have thoughts or comments or questions, please email them into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. and then we are always flummoxed when people can't find the email or don't know what the email is. I will tell you that I was listening to a podcast that I like very much the other day, and I thought, oh, I have a comment for this. I'm going to send them in an email. And I like Googled online and I found their website, and I was like, wow, it's kind of hard to find their email. And I finally found something. I sent the email in, and the next episode I listened to, I realized that they said the same thing. If you have any questions, send it into this email. And it was a different email than I had sent it into. And now I'm just too embarrassed to send to send it again to the correct email.
I think as long as you don't open your email with "I couldn't find your email," then I think you're in the clear.
But sorry about that little tangent, Andy. But we have a couple of exciting announcements to make. We announced these, I feel like, last time, or we teased one of them last time. One of them is the big Halifax event that we are going to. It's the first time that I've ever been to Halifax before, Nova Scotia, and that is on September 22nd. We are doing the Halifax Veg Fest. We're doing a live podcast episode there. So if you live within an 8-hour radius of that, we expect to see your beautiful faces there.
I guess passport permitting, because some people would live within a reasonable 8-hour driving distance of Halifax, but still be in the U.S. So
I especially want to see those people there that live 8 hours north of Halifax.
Yes, absolutely. And Paul, the other a little bit of an announcement. I know I feel like we've been teasing this for weeks now, but if you're listening to this when it comes out, a few days ago on our Patreon feed, we posted the first of our mutual interview episodes. And what that means is, to celebrate hitting a recent Patreon tier, we decided we were going to record two bonus episodes and release them in the month of September. And we've been talking about this for so long that it would be a lot of fun for us to interview each other and get it. It's like a chance to talk about the things that we're really passionate about that are not necessarily vegan specific, and things maybe people have seen sort of seeded in throughout episodes, but we really, really dive into it. And so the first one, which we just released a couple of days ago, is me interviewing you, Paul. And it is a lot of fun. If you've ever wanted to hear Paul talk passionately about the world of math, this is the episode for you. Paul, just the room lights up whenever Paul talks about math.
So passionately, in fact, that a large segment had to be demarcated to the blooper section.
This is true. This is true. So, you know, we also talk about like kind of your early days and making music and just all that good stuff. So if you want some Paul Steller lore, this episode definitely for you. I had a lot of fun time, Paul, not just a little fun time, a lot of fun time talking to you about all of that stuff. And I hope people enjoy that as well. So if you want access to that, it's up on the Patreon. No matter what level you are pledging at, even if it's $1 a month, you get access to that episode. And you can find the Patreon by going to thebeardedvegans.com/beardo, which is spelled B-E-A-R-D-O, and you can follow the Patreon links from there. You like how I said that, Paul?
I did like how you said it. Was like a spelling bee.
Like a question mark for the last letter and hoping I get it correct.
So yes, I really do hope that people enjoy that. That was a very fun one to make. Fun one.
Yes, and so Paul interviewing me will be released on our Patreon a week from now. So
spoiler alert.
Yeah, so get into it. Okay, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into this mailbag, just want to do a tiny little bit of follow-up regarding last week's episode. We've gotten a great response from everybody. As predicted in the episode, a lot of hot takes have come out in the time since we recorded it and actually released it, about 8-day period. And today on our Facebook, I posted a couple of those, both of them from friends of the show, one from Brenda Sanders, one from Christopher Sebastian. They are, I would say, complimentary, but definitely looking at different angles and a bit in response to each other. And I thought they were both very much worth reading. So I want to just direct people to our Facebook and check out those posts, because they definitely hit on a couple of the points we brought up and really expand on them and offer some different perspectives as well. Because as predicted, Paul, we didn't get every possible angle that we could have. And I think there's even some more perspectives we'd like to get on the show at some point, if we can make that happen.
Yeah. And at the time we're recording this, the episode has only been out for a little bit more than 24 hours. So I look forward to continuing to see people's feedback to this. Not that they need me to tell them that, but I look forward to it.
Right on. All right, Paul. With that said, let's get into this mini mailbag.
because the mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more, and you gotta get it out. But the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. And then the barcode reader breaks, and it publishes Clearinghouse Debt.
All right, all right, all right.
When you control the mail, you control information.
All right, Paul, this first one, a lot of people have been asking us about it, and everyone's wondering, are you going to be reviewing The Game Changers, which is the film by James Cameron, documentary all about like plant-based athletes, and sort of the big face of the documentary is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And yes, this thing has been on our radar for so dang long, and it is finally coming out. And the only reason I'm even mentioning it right now on the show is that on September 16th, they're doing like a one night only in theaters thing. Who knows? You know, I'm sure it'll be available widely shortly after that. But we're both planning to see it on September 16th and record an episode shortly after that. So if that's the type of discussion that you enjoy from us and you want to see the film before you hear us talking about it, go get your tickets for that if you want.
I expect high production value in this movie.
High production value, but I've been hearing some conflicted reviews from people that have already seen it. So I feel like this is going to be a really interesting one to get into.
Me too. Me too. But speaking of getting into things, let's get into this first mini mailbag question. So this is an email from T-Ray, who asked, when y'all write your grocery lists, do you write only milk, or will you specify what type or put any qualifiers at all? In my household, we have multiple kinds on hand at all times. I prefer soy in my coffee and almond milk in smoothies or for cooking. I'll write A milk, A dot milk, to denote when we need almond milk, but find myself only writing milk for soy. Same-ish question for mock products like soysage versus sausage, etc.
Paul, this seems like it's almost a question about, in your head, do you think about these products as just being that product, or do you think about it as being the vegan version of the product? It's almost like wondering if someone who speaks a foreign language, when they're speaking that language, if in their head, if they're like translating it to their original language, or if they're thinking about it in that foreign language, you know, that type of thing, like perception. And I guess I could say for myself, I don't have a grocery list ever because I don't have a refrigerator. But for me personally, when I'm thinking about these products, I'm usually not thinking I need to get that soy-based sausage. I'm like, I need to pick up some sausage. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, probably like the tube from Light Life would be the way to go, or like that's what I want. But I'm never specifically going out of my way to write vegan, which is sort of that age-old conundrum, right, of, you know, putting vegan in front of things and people are like, we get it, you're vegan. But then if you don't, they're like, wait, is that vegan? Did you know? Are you still vegan? What about you, Paul?
Well, I think, Andy, we are neither the people to be asking this question, because I don't have to typically buy for other people. I'm not usually writing anything down. And in my head, I know kind of what I want. I think the only time when this does come into play is if I'm doing some sort of, say, baking or something like that, and I need a specific milk, like, oh, this recipe calls for almond milk specifically or coconut milk specifically, then I guess I'll write it down to specify what it is. But I guess unless I'm writing it down for someone else, because now I'm thinking if my mom is going to the grocery store or something and she's picking something up for me, and I want some like vegan meat products, I will probably say, like, get me the tofurkey.
Bring me the puck.
because it's like, I know which product that I want. So I feel like in that case, it's almost too general to even just say like sausage or vegan meats. Like, I don't know. I feel like it totally just depends on your specific situation. But I feel like it's nicer to just be able to write down milk and know what kind you want. But in the same way that I'm sure people who drink dairy milk, like at one point it was decided between two people, okay, we're always going to drink 2% milk or something like that. So now they only write milk from then on. I'm sure the same thing kind of happens when there's like a vegan couple living together or something. Probably they're like, oh yeah, almond milk is the thing that we get. So we just write down milk, you know?
Yeah, and I'd imagine that like non-vegan couples probably aren't writing down cow's milk. right? They're just writing down milk. And so I think that for both of us, we've been vegan long enough that, I guess I can only speak for myself, but like I've been vegan long enough where it's just not in my head. I'm not like making those translations. I'm just, I want milk. And that means I'm going to get whatever, you know, type of milk that I want. But yeah, I guess unless it's for a specific recipe or like mac and cheese or something like that, that would benefit more from cashew milk or something. Generally speaking, you know, this is not something that I am ever thinking this is the vegan version of it. Cause I'm, you know, if it's not the vegan version of it, then it's not food to me.
Yeah. I always go straight for that pea protein enhanced milk that just tastes gross, but has oh so much protein.
Paul loves that protein.
I do. I do.
Okay. All right. The hard hitting questions, Paul. This email comes into us from Emily O, who writes, if you are a vegan and you have a, quote, favorite animal, are you speciesist too? I'm having a lot of feelings about this question. Please discuss.
Andy, my initial reaction is no. And I feel like that stems from the fact that it's totally okay that we have favorite people, you know? It's like for the majority of individuals, their favorite people, I would guess, are their close friends, maybe their family, you know, maybe their loved one, their spouse, their partner. It's like, I feel like those would be considered your favorite people. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that we just are drawn to one animal over another. Now, I guess the comparison falls apart when, if I asked, well, why are these my favorite people? And I could say, well, it's because I'm like the closest to them for a variety of reasons. And that's not necessarily the case for animals. Like my favorite animal might be a penguin, and I've never seen a penguin in my life before, but I don't know. I guess there's some faults in the comparison, but my initial instinct is still to say, no, it's not speciesist.
Do you feel like it's in the example of like a penguin? Do you feel like it's wrong to say a penguin is my favorite? Like, is the reason because the animal is cute and you're like you're valuing an aesthetic over like their contribution to the ecology or like whatever it is? Do you feel like there's something like superficial about that? Like, does that matter?
I don't know, but Andy, it seems like a dull, dull world to live in, a world where all that you think of is like, what is this being's contribution to me and society?
Bees are my favorite.
not that's a bad thing to like know about and to consider, but it doesn't to me. And I'm sure, Andy, you know what? I shouldn't even say this because I'm sure there are people out there who are like, this is my favorite animal because they contribute so much to their ecosystem or something like that. I feel like that's still a valid reason for an animal to be your favorite animal. But I feel like many people don't operate that way. And I think that that's okay too. Like, I don't think you should force someone to be like, no, if you're going to have a favorite animal, it has to have this very rational and very logistic and unemotional reason why, you know?
Yeah. And I guess it also seems silly to me to be like, you must love all animals equally.
Which, you know, we've talked about that plenty of times, and how there are people who put out the message when they're promoting veganism, you know, put out the messaging that you should care about a person as much as you care about a dog, as much as you care about a cow, as much as you care about a frog, you know, I don't think that that's going to reach many people. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of whether or not I think that all of those beings deserve to be respected, which they do, like, I don't think that that's going to reach many people, because I don't think that that's how people perceive the world. We don't perceive the world like, even with, if you're just limiting to just thinking about people, we don't like, even if we believe that all humans have these like basic rights that need to be respected, that doesn't mean that you don't have favorite people, or that doesn't mean that you're not closer to some people than others. And that doesn't mean that you don't care about some more than others, because I would say probably 99% of the world cares about certain people more than just some random person that if you just chose a random person out of the entire Earth's population. So I feel like that's a very kind of unnatural way of trying to get across why we should, you know, be compassionate for all beings. This was a tangent, but
that's what we're here for, Paul. Yeah, I mean, I guess part of me thinks maybe it is speciesist, but does it matter? You know, there are certain things that, like, we've talked about, say, like dressing up your dog or something like that, and how maybe that's not like the most harmful thing ever, but you should at least like recognize that generally speaking, unless it's like a raincoat or shoes or something like that, or a sweater for warmth, like there's obviously certain utilitarian functions for clothing on animals. But like for the most part, like when we put clothing on an animal, it's for us. It's for us and maybe the reactions we get from strangers more so than it is for that specific animal. And like maybe that's not cool, but also who cares, I guess, is one of those things. Obviously, there's like a certain degree that someone can take it to that's like really weird and like unnecessary. But like for the most part, you're like, maybe that is speciesist, but is it really the most harmful thing?
Well, I think the degree that would make it weird for many people, for many vegans, is when people start like profiting off of these animals. Like, say they have an Instagram or something like that, and it's like this whole Instagram is just a cat with wacky hats on, and like that's the whole thing. You know, it's like I feel like that's the degree where many people, not everybody, but many people start to become uncomfortable.
Paul, are you talking about wacky hat cat? I love wacky hat cat.
Oh man,
cat.
I gotta register that domain right now. but I will say, Emily, even if we don't believe that this is speciesist, or if it is, if it really matters, I will say, like, going along with what our entire podcast is about, I feel like it's important to ask yourself these things and to have these sorts of discussions, you know?
Yeah. And also on the notion of sort of degrees and line pushing and stuff, I think if you have an animal that you're like, I enjoy this animal aesthetically more than other animals, or I enjoy the way that they move when they run or something like that more than others, as long as that doesn't then affect how you treat other animals, like you're like, I love chickens, but like fuck pigs or something like that, you know, specifically because of your love of chickens or something, like obviously that seems like it enters into like wrong territory. But I don't know, if someone's like has a preference for red hair or something like that, I don't know, that's like a weird tangent. But I do have a preference for people named Paul Steller.
Thank you. Who do happen to have red hair. Andy, I feel like what you are kind of dipping your toe into right now is that conversation about how we what animals we choose to use in our vegan messaging and what pictures we choose to use, because like, are we just promoting animals that animals need to be care about because, oh, look at this cute sheep or something like that, you know? And I feel like I don't even remember what we said about it, but when we talked about Oakjaw, Andy, like 17 years ago, I do remember we had a big discussion on like, why the heck did they make Oakjaw look like that? You know, it's supposed to, that like Oakjaw is supposed to be a pig, but they don't really look like a pig. Is it trying to dissociate our connection with pigs? So it's like, I feel like those sorts of conversations are, might I say, fun to have, Andy, which is like how we choose to like making sure not to portray the message, you should only care about this animal because they are cute.
Yeah, no, I think that actually is a good point. And I feel like we are getting so far away from Emily's original question, but this is what we're here to do, Paul. is this idea of what animals do we choose to promote? And obviously, we don't want to fall into the trap of someone being like, oh, you only used a cow in your promotional shot. Do you hate all other animals or something? Yeah. But I do think it is important for us to be mindful of like which animals are being represented in our advocacy. And I know that there are a lot of people who say, for instance, we shouldn't use marine animals. We shouldn't use fish or lobsters because they are not cute animals. And there's an empathy gap there. But it's also kind of like, well, how can we eliminate that empathy gap if we don't use those creatures in our advocacy work?
I see. Don't you have a good old lobster in that new Sea Life, Not Seafood shirt, Andy?
I do, Paul. This was not meant to be an intentional promotion of my new shirt, but it does have both.
I'm promoting it.
It has octopus, shrimp, crabs, fish, of course, and lobster. CompassionCo.com.
All right. Paul. This next email, Christine V. emailed in. Before I went vegan, I was an avid watcher of cooking shows. After I went vegan, I now can't watch most of my favorites due to the fact that they use so much animal in the recipes. I was just wondering what you and the other beardos had to say on the subject. I miss my cooking shows. I know there are plenty of vegan YouTube channels about vegan cooking. I just wish that more mainstream cooking shows would include vegan recipes.
Oh, Paul, this one really just speaks to my heart because I love Cutthroat Kitchen so yes, much.
It's a good one.
Such a good show. I mean, I love Alton Brown. I definitely used to watch so many shows on the Cooking Network, especially since there was the rise of like the competition cooking show, like Chopped, especially. That was like my favorite. And then obviously there's was that Iron Chef back in the day. All of those things I love. And it's a fun thing to watch and go, well, how would I put together, you know, gumballs and broccoli and chili paste and like all of these like weird ingredients? What would I do in this person's situation? And it does, after going vegan, it does make it harder to enjoy those shows, I have found. But it hasn't prevented me from watching them entirely. And I don't know if I should feel guilty, because I guess on some level it's normalizing, maybe not even some level, maybe just blatantly it is normalizing the violence against animals. And by me watching it, am I giving them more clicks, more views, more ad revenue, and therefore perpetuating those things? Obviously, like one person streaming the show is like a very minimal contribution to that. But is it on some level, even just like mentally in my mind, is it making it harder for me to like squeeze out that last little bit of speciesism that's in there or something? And maybe that is why I'm like, eh, is it the biggest deal if you dress up your dog? You know, is it because I watch these shows? Like, are all of these things connected? I don't have answers for that. And obviously, I do wish that there was more vegan. Well, one, I wish that any cooking show was vegan, obviously. And there are a couple of great ones on YouTube. Shout out to the Vegan Roadie, of course. And it's definitely something that I wrestle with all the time. And I don't know, I guess since I don't have a TV with cable anymore, it's rare that I'll just like put on the Food Network and see what's on. But I definitely have been like, oh, new season of Cutthroat Kitchen on Hulu, gonna watch all of that like right in a row. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, this person, Christine, is not asking like, is it not vegan to do that? But maybe we're just talk about our thoughts. But like, how do you feel about this stuff, Paul?
Well, I will say I don't watch a tremendous amount of cooking shows. Like, I've seen Cutthroat Kitchen and it's certainly enjoyable. It's just, and like Nailed It, I've watched that. Like, they're just not typically my thing. I will say this first.
Paul,
and foremost,
you're just like, I don't get why they have to heat up the tofu before they eat it.
You shush, Andy. I will say first and foremost, obviously, if you say we're not vegan, really enjoyed these things, went vegan, and then you're like, oh man, I'm just grossed out by this now. Like, I can't watch this now. I got like no problem with that. Like, if that's your, if you don't want to watch these things because you feel like it's normalizing eating meat, or it's just makes you uncomfortable, that's completely fine. What I will say though is I feel like, when you say, Andy, like, I don't know if this is a big deal or not, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I'm chalking it up to the same thing as dressing up your animals in clothing. I feel like it's part of this larger thing, which is just that we live in this very, very non-vegan world. And so naturally the media that's put out is incredibly non-vegan. And, you know, no matter what show on any mainstream show that you're watching, like the production that's going into those shows, I'm sure all of the catering that all the people are eating, I'm sure that that's not vegan food. Anytime that someone's eating a meal on camera, if it's real food, I'm sure that that's typically not vegan food. So there's like, there's those little things, which I feel like is maybe diving a little bit too deep, but something that's maybe more relatable to this situation is, you know, there's people that don't watch things like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings because they use horses and they're using live animals, or any other show that uses live animals. And I completely understand that critique, and I completely understand why someone would be like, I don't want to support this because of that specific thing. But I guess maybe this is a cop out because I want to watch these things, but I guess I chalk it up to the fact that it's like, yes, the overwhelming majority of the world is not vegan. So why would I expect people to be putting these things out in a vegan way? Which makes it more surprising and awesome that there are some of these movies that are coming out that, like The Lion King, for instance, that's all CGI animals. Of course, those sorts of things are going to be easier to make with CGI than if just have like all these different types of animals interacting with each other in real life, which could probably not happen very easily. So it's like, it makes sense that they would try to do those, but it is nice to see that sort of movement now, whether or not that's because of ethical reasons or if it's just because people are like, yeah, I could spend months training this elephant. And then when we go to shoot the stuff, like not exactly sure what's going to happen, or I could just carry around a club with a tennis ball on it. And then later on just hire someone for $10,000 and be like, here, put an elephant where this tennis ball is, you know?
Yeah, I get that point, Paul, but I also, the debate about like the animals being used on screen versus the behind the scenes aspect of it, like the catering is not vegan. It's likely the stars you're watching in your favorite movies aren't vegan and they're spending their paycheck on non-vegan things. It's almost like the debates that we've had, or conversations, I should say, about like theme parks. And if you go to a theme park that happens to have like a petting zoo or some animal attraction, if it's, you know, and we're not talking about like SeaWorld, which is the main attraction is the animals, or an aquarium or a zoo, but there's like one safari ride at like the Animal Kingdom, whatever it is at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And then we've had discussions about like, is it morally different when they have that versus the fact that they're also just serving tons of dead animals day in, day out, even if they don't have the live animals. And it does feel like there's something different when the animal exploitation is actually depicted on the screen, whether it is the riding of the horses or, you know, the serving of an animal's flesh on a TV show. It does, because it like those things do kind of make the animal exploitation center stage. Now, granted, like Game of Thrones, it's not like it's all about riding horses everywhere. It's just they happen to have horses somewhere. And a cooking show is, hey, this is how we're going to cook this dead cow's flesh today. You know, like I do feel like there's a difference there. So I don't know. I don't even know if it's like morally defensible to watch those things. But I also feel like, again, for me, it's such a minor point of my life that I don't feel like I would be really missing anything if I didn't watch Cutthroat Kitchen anymore. But also there are times when it's like what makes existence bearable is having these types of minute distractions. And if that's the type of thing that gets you through your day and like generally speaking, it doesn't cause you to contribute to any more animal exploitation, then it, you know, it doesn't make me lose any sleep at night, but it does make me feel conflicted when I watch it. Just like it makes me feel conflicted, you know, that I love like 70s exploitation films, or at least used to. Like that used to be, like, I used to love studying and writing about those types of films and horror films. And, you know, there's lots of problems with a lot of those films, especially back in the day, but even to this very day. And it's just like one of those things that for every individual, they have to figure out what the line is for them to draw. And I guess I'm at a point where I'm like, I guess I'm just kind of okay with these things because I'm going to focus on the areas that I can really have an impact. And I guess that's sort of where I come down on it.
That makes sense. I appreciate that, Andy.
All right, Paul, we're bringing it home with one last email from Ryan H. Now, Ryan wrote in a relatively lengthy email, so I'm going to summarize most of it. So Ryan talks about listening to an older episode of ours, somewhere in like the mid to early 20s. And in it, we sort of talk about our restaurant ordering strategy. And we both kind of bring up the fact that, you know, neither of us likes to sit down and say to the server, I'm vegan, accommodate me. And, you know, the sort of one, just in terms of it, I don't know, it feels like weird and almost like pompous to say. Obviously, it depends how you say it. But also there's the obstacle of the server knowing what veganism actually is. I think that's becoming less of an obstacle these days compared to even just a few years ago. But I've never felt comfortable just saying, I'm vegan, accommodate me. just from an angle of like, I'm not sure if they really know what that means. But anyway, so Ryan emails in with that summarization of a previous episode and then says that they had an incident in which, you know, normally if they go out to a place that isn't fully vegan and there's not a lot of vegan, clearly marked vegan options on the menu, they will just, instead of saying, I'm vegan, make this vegan for me, they will specifically say, let me get the fajita plate, no cheese, no sour cream, you know, is there chicken stock in the rice, whatever. But they were doing that and a family member sort of took over and was like, they're vegan, make the fajitas vegan. And of course, then they came out with cheese and sour cream on them because the order didn't understand the difference between vegan and vegetarian. So Ryan then concludes the email by saying, in non-vegan restaurants, when dining with non-vegan friends or family, is it better to A, tell your fellow friends or family to buzz off and not talk about how you're vegan if you suspect that they'll interfere while you're customizing the hell out of something to make it vegan? B, just tell them to drop in that you're vegan and then still continue down the customization path. C, tell the waiter that you're vegan up front and define it. D, something else? Paul, what is your strategy for this situation?
I think if my friend or family is going to make it known that I am vegan, I probably wouldn't tell them, like, please don't do this. Although I will say, I forget if Ryan had included this in their email, but I totally have done that before. I did not tell them to buzz off, but I've told, because I have, you know, I have a wonderful family, a very loving family. I'm very fortunate, who like to accommodate me with a vegan option if we're going someplace that's not going to have vegan options. Like if we're going to a party or something like that, that's not going to have vegan options. But I have some family members that very much like to make it known that this thing is vegan. Like, because Paul is vegan, these are the vegan cupcakes and they are for Paul. And I kind of do regularly have to be like, you don't need to announce that the thing is vegan. Like if anything, that's just going to make other people not want to have, that's going to make some people not want to have it. Whereas it's like, if there's enough for everybody, then you might as well just be like, here's cupcakes. So barring that example, I feel like I would probably go with B, which was just let the family or friend drop in that I'm vegan at the restaurant and then kind of still continue down the customization path. Because I feel like then you kind of get the best of both options, which is your server knows that you're vegan, and if they know what that means, awesome. And if they don't know what that means, then you can kind of continue down the customization. So you're hopefully specifying everything that you want and are going to exclude all the non-vegan stuff anyways. So I think that option kind of is like the safest option.
Yeah, I feel like I can get down with that. To me, at its core, this is almost like a conversation about like boundaries and maybe consent on some level, that it's about people feeling like they can speak for you. And it's a hard thing to speak up against, because I think at its core, family members do that because they care about you and they want to feel like they're advocating for you. Personally, I hate it if I'm with someone and, you know, sometimes it's like you're at a party with a bunch of non-vegans and someone's like, oh, Andy's vegan. And then all of a sudden it's like, that's what you have to talk about. And maybe that's not the case with friends and family that are super used to it. But it is still sort of a thing that, even though veganism is about something much bigger than myself and it is about, you know, all these beings that we're trying to be allies to. But on some level it is, it's like, it's my personal practice. I want to practice it the way that I want to. And I don't want other people to have to really go out of their way to advocate for me or sort of talk over me or talk about my, you know, philosophical beliefs in a way that's not how I want them to be represented. And I am not someone that goes around, despite the fact that I have a vegan t-shirt company, Paul, I'm not someone that likes to go around screaming, I'm vegan, I'm vegan, I'm vegan. Like, to me, that's just not the way that I feel the most comfortable doing my advocacy. And some people, it works really well for them. For me personally, it's just not the type of thing that I feel is like really helpful in starting the conversations. I have a lot of other like entry points that I would rather use as my avenue for starting those types of conversations, especially with random strangers or a waiter or server or something like that. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm more a fan of option A. And I do think it is, if this is, you know, if I was in a situation where someone did that to me, I would afterwards, I would say, hey, I appreciate you speaking up for me, but you know, I prefer to be in control of how that information gets doled out and how I'm ordering my food because I've had these bad experiences. And this is just me. I want to be able to represent myself, but you know, thank you very much. Just like when you receive like a non-vegan gift or something, you know, it doesn't do anyone any good to be like, you fool, how could you not have known that I didn't want beeswax in this lipstick or whatever. You know, it's like, thank you very much. I really appreciate the sentiment. You know, unfortunately, I'm not able, or I choose not to use this for this reason. I'm going to make sure to give it to somebody else that can, or I'm going to give it back to you, or, you know, whatever your avenue is there. I know we recently did kind of a whole episode about that, but, you know, and just being like kind and kind about it, unless the person has ill intent, there's no reason not to be kind about the whole thing. But also you should speak up and stand up for yourself and represent veganism the way that you want it to be represented.
Which 100% agree with all that. Definitely easier said than done. In my personal experience, and I think you would agree too that it's like it's a very logical thing. You're like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. And then when you have to actually do that, like confront your family or friend because they're like, you know, like you said, because they have good intentions and they think that they're helping you and they want to be helpful. It is definitely a tough, at least for many people, a tough conversation to have.
Yeah,
but an important one nonetheless.
Yeah, and you know, I will say that there have been times when at like weddings or something like that, when I don't want to like bother the servers, and I'm just like unsure about like a vegan dish at a buffet or something like, and a non-vegan friend who has no problem, you know, probably the same type of person that doesn't have any problem making a phone call or something like that, you know, like, you know. Would straight up be like, I'm going to go ask this server and then make sure to follow up and like really be on it to make sure that you feel accommodated at this wedding. And I have appreciated that a lot, you know, so it is like a fine line, I think. But yeah, I agree with you, Paul. It's a lot easier said than done when you have to stand up for yourself. Whenever there's like a moment when I have to stand up for myself, I'm like, God damn it. I can't believe I have to stand. I don't want to have to stand up for myself, right? You know, because like, you know, who likes to be uncomfortable? Who likes to have like that rift? But it is important to stand up because often, you know, the friend and family, they don't know that it's something that makes you uncomfortable or sort of like crossing a specific line. And you do have to speak up in order for them to know these things. Because I think for a lot of people, especially those that don't have lots of vegan friends and family, or maybe you're the only vegan that they know, or you're freshly vegan or something like that, they just don't understand that it's a thing that might be kind of like a sensitive situation to navigate.
Parents just don't understand, Andy.
All right. Well, I think we can leave it at that unless you have any other thoughts, Paul.
I think that's good. If you have any thoughts, though, dear listener, please send those in to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. Also accepting any submissions for our 200th episode mailbag, which, again, we would like to make more, you know, podcast focused. But we will always accept and always love receiving your comments, questions, and concerns. So, Andy, do you have anything fun coming up?
Yes, I do. This coming weekend, September 14th, I'm going to be at the Richmond Veg Fest in Richmond, Virginia. September 22nd, Paul, that's Halifax, baby. Going to Canada, doing that live podcast. I think I'll probably bring along a couple of Compassion Co. shirts to that one as well. Probably not the full setup, but if you have any requests, let us know. We'll definitely bring the Beard Vegan shirts and stickers and buttons, all that good stuff. September 28th, Vegandale Fest, New York City. And then we crawl into October, Paul. October 5th and 6th, Portland Veg Fest. I'll be there on the 6th, speaking on that panel with Callie from VWPA and Chelsea Lincoln from Fat Vegan Voice. And I got a bunch of other stuff in October, November, but you can check all those dates, deeds, and links out at CompassionCo.com.
Right on.
And don't forget, if you come by the Compassion Company table and say, what's up, Beardo, we'll hook you up with the Beard Vegans button or sticker as well.
Sounds good, Andy.
Yes. Yes, it does. It does sound good when people say, what's up, Beardo.
I think I gave my first Beardo what's up response at the Triangle Veg Fest the other day.
How'd it feel?
Awkward.
I've started to feel way less awkward saying it, and it's kind of nice because it gives me something to say as opposed to, hey.
Yep, that's still my normal response.
Paul, well, you know, we really downsized the mailbag for this episode. Hope people enjoyed a fun, frivolous, lighthearted Bearded Vegans episode. But I know it would be nigh impossible to ever downsize you saying the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Welcome to the show. Oh, that's you.
Oh, goodness. But we have a couple announcements. But we have a couple exciting announcements to make.
A couple of enunciations to make.
You specify what type or put any quantifiers at all. In my household, we have several kinds of hand...
Qualifiers.
Wait, what?
You said quantifiers, not qualifiers.
Oh, whoops. Where this tennis ball is, you know?
Yeah. Shut up.
Oh, that was good timing.
Hold up.